Big news! This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually deals and which are clickbait. They'll also tell you when to skip the bundle and book separately. Plus, how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Fromer. I'm often interviewed about different aspects of the travel experience, and I know that I give the most boring answer whenever anybody asks me, what do I pack? My answer is usually I pack the usual devices, I pack the chargers for those devices, and I pack clothing, and that's kind of it. I'm very low maintenance. But there are folks who really go that extra mile to make sure that every comfort is in place. And my next guest, Dawn Gilbertson, interviewed a bunch of them, and it was absolutely fascinating. Dawn is a travel columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Hey, Dawn, welcome back to the Fromer Travel Show.
Hi, Pauline. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So I got to ask you, how did you find the people who pack in such unusual ways?
Well, I think, you know, I was thinking about what I pack, and people always ask me what I put in mine. And so I just, you know, kind of cast a wide net from different sources I have, and then also some hotel industry executives. A lot of this started with a year ago, I met Peggy Rowe, the chief customer officer at Marriott. And we were just chatting just real casually about different travel hacks. And I just loved her thing about putting makeup into contact lens cases, like her own little samples. So that's really where I got the idea a year ago.
Right. And she also picks her outfits in advance by picking which shoes she's going to wear with them. How does that work?
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think I could ever do this. I am always shoving so many pairs of shoes, even in a carry-on. But I loved her idea of, so she'll pick a color shoe and she'll say, okay, I'm only taking black shoes on this trip, you know, whether it's one pair or two pairs. And so then that dictates her clothes choices. So if something doesn't go with black shoes, it stays home.
Yeah. She's also a very guilt-ridden parent. It's funny. I guess maybe because my parents were always traveling all the time and left me at home, I never felt that much guilt, but what does she do to try and keep her relationship with her young daughter going when she's on the road?
Okay, that's a different hotel executive. That's the Hyatt.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Which hotel executive is that? And
okay,
tell a little bit about her story.
I also learned something interesting from Lori Blair, who's a senior VP of global marketing at Hyatt Hotels. And, you know, she brings some of the usual stuff that a lot of us bring from home. But another thing she does on every trip, she has a six-year-old daughter. She brings one of her daughter's stuffed animals, a different one every trip. And then she takes a photo or a video of it, you know, throughout her travels, you know, kind of a modern day Flat Stanley, if you will.
Yeah, I thought that was very sweet. And then the founder of Breeze Airlines, I guess, does he get more room for luggage than the rest of us? He brings a pillow.
Well, and he stuffs it. He sent me a photo of that last time I saw him. I was asking him about it. So he stuffs a pillow into his smaller carry-on, and he's very careful. He has a bad back, and he's very careful to put a different color pillowcase on there, not white, so that the housekeeping attendants don't swipe it.
Right. I thought that made a lot of sense. You also talked with the gentleman who is the announcer for the New York Yankees. And he, I guess because he's on the road for so many months of the year, he carries a lot of stuff. Some of the stuff reminded me of White Lotus, because he carries a portable blender.
Yeah, he carries a small blender. He takes it everywhere and he whips up protein smoothies in his hotel room or sometimes at the field. I mean, that one I hadn't even I hadn't even thought of doing that one. I mean, it's no bigger than some of the other things people were telling me they were bringing, like, you know, a garment steamer, which I do carry when I can.
I thought that was interesting. That seemed to be the most common thing to carry, I guess, because why is everybody carrying steamers? Don't most hotel rooms have irons and ironing boards?
Well, I'm not sure the last time you, it depends really, of course, where you stay. Yes, most hotels at every price level have irons, but you know, you plug that thing in, especially if you're in a hurry and you never know what's going to come spouting out of that little device. And the CEO of Farmer's Fridge told me that, you know, he became a steamer convert when he got rust all over his shirt from one of the hotel irons. So they're just not 100% dependable. Plus, a steamer is so much more efficient.
Huh. I guess I'm just wrinkled. I don't know. I don't iron at home. I don't iron on the road. I don't anyway.
This would not be necessary then for you. I don't bring it on every trip, but if I'm going on a trip where I have to wear a suit or other business clothes, it's so much easier than an iron.
Right. And another common thing for people who apparently have never heard of Starbucks, people are bringing their own coffee and tea makers. That blew my mind.
Well, I think there's a couple things at play there. So I first heard about this a couple of years ago. I do a lot of stories on Las Vegas and, you know, people are always looking for ways to save money. And so people in these different Facebook groups would say they would Amazon or pack in their suitcase, you know, a small little coffee maker. And then when I talked to people, including the chief customer officer at Marriott, she just likes to have a very specific latte. And so she just bought a camping coffee press and plans to put that in use on a trip coming up. Because, you know, think about it. Like if you're in your room, yes, hotel rooms have coffee makers. And I'm not a coffee snob, so that will do in a pinch. But then, you know, you have to head down to the hotel restaurant or Starbucks. And some people just don't want to do that in their pajamas or get dressed to do that.
Yeah, I guess. It was a fascinating article, I gotta say, Dawn. Well, thank you so much for recapping it here on the Fromer Travel Show.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. It was a fun one.
Always looking for ways when I go into different time zones of not getting on that time zone. It's one of the reasons I love going to Spain, because you can go to Spain and kind of stay on a New York time zone by simply sleeping in the morning and eating late, as the Spaniards do. There's the other direction, though, where you're probably going to wake up earlier. And our next guest wrote a beautiful article for the Smithsonian Magazine. It's called To Truly Experience These Five Cities, Wake Before Sunrise. Her name is Laura Kinnairy. Hey, Laura, thank you so much for appearing on the Fromer Travel Show.
Hi, Pauline. Thank you for having me.
So I got to ask, how did you come up with the idea for this article?
You know, it's something that had been percolating for a long time. Years ago, I was a backpacker and I was traveling through New Zealand, Australia, and Thailand. And I was mostly on my own, but on the last night that I was traveling with my then boyfriend, we got up very early in Sydney, Australia to watch the sunrise. And when we saw how many people were out there, you know, it was super early. There were people exercising, there were people walking and in the water and just watching the sunrise with us, but it felt so lively. And so it was something that was really, it was such a beautiful memory and it always stuck with me. And then fast forward to this November, I was in Hanoi, Vietnam, and I was up early and I was posting on Instagram and somebody said to me, if you're up that early, you should go and check out the lake in the middle of the city. And I said, it's 6 a.m. And he said, no, promise me, go check out this lake and you will be so pleasantly surprised. So as soon as I walked out the door of my hotel, I saw people playing badminton and there were women, lots of local people, but super friendly and welcoming me. But women were doing, they were gathered together, they were doing Tai Chi, but at the lake there were tango lessons and tons of people walking. It was just phenomenal. And I thought, this is the way to experience the local side of a city.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. Many years ago, I was in the temple city of Madurai, which is in India, and there was a tour called Good Morning Madurai. It started at, I think, 5 a.m, and you saw the city waking up. And, you know, sometimes when you're in a place, it can feel overwhelming. It's sensory overload. But seeing it waking up, somehow each little element of the destination kind of notched into place and built on my understanding of the place. Mm-hmm. And in Madurai, I mean, they have this tradition where women every morning decorate the front of their house with colored sand, and they create this very intricate design with colored sand, and then the first person to walk out of the house destroys it. And that's part of the prayer. It's a type of worship that you create something beautiful, but it's impermanent.
I love that.
It just was extraordinary. And we saw somebody do it, and it was a little silly. We tried to recreate it. We couldn't come close to what she had done.
Uh-huh.
But you talk about not only in Hanoi and in Sydney, there are often major attractions that are open very early, in Honolulu. Why should you get up early in Honolulu?
Well, that's a really interesting thing. I think a lot of people think about beach destinations and think about, like, yeah, of course I would want to get up early and watch the sunrise, but there's so much else to do. They have sunrise boat tours where you can actually go snorkeling that early in the morning.
Wow.
You know, there are bakeries that are open super early, 5:30 in the morning, where you can go and just be among the locals. I think that in places that are close to water, people really, you know, there's always that sea breeze and they want to enjoy the day before it gets too hot. So if you're in Honolulu and you get up and just walk along the beach or just get out into the city, you can experience Honolulu without, like you said, feeling overwhelmed. You know,
right.
It doesn't feel like an empty city. It feels like a place that's already getting going and you can experience the local culture.
And I was very surprised to read in your article that Pearl Harbor, that major historic site, opens many days at 7 a.m. So I would assume you're going to avoid the crowds by going that early.
Yeah, it's a great time to go. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. I even forgot that. It was everything that I was researching. I thought, oh my God, you could do this, that, you know, so early in the morning, or you could do this other thing. It's a great time to go and experience it, like you said, before the crowds, but also to kind of have that moment to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And also, sadly, because we live in a time of climate change, certain destinations are crazy hot during the day. And so Phoenix in summer, talk about everything that goes on in Phoenix at dawn. This was astonishing to me.
Well, it's so interesting. Phoenix is such a hot place, you know, literally and figuratively. But during the day in the summertime, people just don't want to go out. So their botanical garden is open very early in the morning. You know, you can go and walk around that. The zoo is open very early in the morning. And it's open even earlier for people that belong to these organizations. So if you're a local and you end up joining the zoo or joining the botanical garden, you can go there at 6 a.m. People that are not, if they don't belong, they can go at 7 a.m. And that's absolutely perfect. But then there's also all of the hiking that people do so early in the morning. And, you know, you don't think of Phoenix as a summertime destination, but if you kind of shift the way that you think about a schedule, it could be a great summertime destination.
Sure. I mean, you get up really, really early. You take a hike. I would think the zoo is even better at that time in the morning because that's when a lot of animals are most active. You know, usually, you know, it's sunrise and it's sunset. Then you just spend the rest of the day, I don't know, indoors in a spa.
Or by the pool in the shade.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have Hanoi, you have Sydney, Phoenix, Honolulu. The one we didn't hit that's in your article is Da Nang. Mm-hmm. Why do you go get up early in Da Nang?
Da Nang was really interesting to me just because when I started the article, I started in Vietnam and I realized that because Vietnam can be a very hot, humid place, a lot of people just tend to get up early naturally. And in Da Nang, recently there has been a trend of young people getting up and getting coffee and watching the sunrise, but they gather together. It's not just, you know, you see a couple here and there. It's just groups of people coming to watch the sunrise, but it's also, you know, there's people swimming in the water. Da Nang is an oceanfront city. Sure. And the people that are swimming, it's not just one or two, it's groups of people that are taking advantage of the early morning and just taking advantage of those hours before everything kind of comes into play. A lot of these people, like I said, are locals and they're wanting to do their exercise and you know, socialize with their friends and their family, their community before they go into work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're very on trend with this. I was just reading, I think it was in the New York Times, there's now these dance parties around the United States that I think start at 6 p.m. And all my old fogey friends were sharing this one with one another on Facebook. I think the world gets up earlier, that apparently nightlife spots are also closing earlier than they used to in many cities around the globe. So early morning is it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I did see this dance party trend and I bookmarked it. It's something that I'm definitely interested in.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will both be at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference as teachers, which happens in August in Corte Madera, which is a suburb of San Francisco. It is a wonderful, wonderful event, and I wanted to tell all of our listeners about it well in advance because there are scholarships they give out. Because it's a little pricey. So if you're interested in going, go to bookpassage.com. You'll see Laura there. You'll see me there. You'll meet the wonderful Don George, and Bob Holmes is the photography chair. So it's not just travel writing. It's also travel photography. And it's my favorite 4 days of the year. It's really like summer camp for highly creative, highly adventurous people. So anyway, that's the end of that unpaid for commercial. I just wanted to let you all know. And thank you so much, Laura, for appearing on the Fromer Travel Show.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Before I say goodbye for this week, I wanted to acknowledge that this podcast is coming out during Memorial Day weekend, which is always the unofficial kickoff to summer. So I've been appearing on a lot of TV news broadcasts to talk about what this summer could bring, ways to save money, which is something we always want to do, no matter whether we're a luxury traveler or a backpacker, and other items to know about if you still haven't booked for summer but are planning on taking a summer vacation, and damn it, why not? You should. So first of all, there's a misunderstanding about summer, that it is this time of year when it's always expensive to travel. It is expensive compared with other times of the year if you travel during the tenderloin, the meat of the travel season, by which I mean June and July. Now, why is that the most popular part of summer? Well, the kids are in school, or out of school, I should say, and so families are hitting the road. A number of years ago, I was vacationing I wasn't fully vacationing. I was also doing work there, but I was at Yellowstone National Park, and I arrived during the second week of August, and I left at the end of the third week of August. And during that time, the crowds who were there very much in place at the beginning of my trip disappeared. And I talked to one of the rangers about it, and she said, oh, well, many schools start teaching again in mid-August. And so all of the family travelers have to run back home to get their kids into class, and the crowds disappear. Prices dip in the second half of August because the crowds dip, and they dip even lower in September, which is still considered summertime travel season. So if you can put off your vacation to the latter half of summer, you can save a hell of a lot of money. Other ways to save money on summer? Well, for some folks, summer means getting the gang together, renting a house, you know, next to a lake or next to a beach or whatever it is. And they make a mistake. They go with convenience. They use Airbnb, or they use VRBO, or they use one of the other booking sites that charges ugly fees. So what I recommend, if you want to do that classic, let's rent a vacation home and spend a week at the beach type of vacation, what you need to do is research it on VRBO, not Airbnb, and I'll tell you why. You research it on VRBO because VRBO almost always lists who the property manager is for the rental you're going to be booking. It's a little more hit or miss on Airbnb. Sometimes they list that, most often they don't. And then, so you research it, you find the perfect house, and then instead of booking on VRBO, you reach out directly to the property manager. Now, why do you do that? Because the property manager doesn't charge all of the ugly fees that Airbnb does, that VRBO does, that other third-party sites do. And if this is a substantial house, if this is an investment, if this is an expensive place, because it's you pay the fees that are a percentage of the nightly price, and not just a percentage of the nightly price, they're also a percentage of the cleaning fees, then you can save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, simply by cutting out those fees. So that's a tip I have. If you're going to Europe, Europe gets very, very crowded in summer. So it's a good idea to go to so-called secondary cities or secondary destinations in Europe. Not only will they be less crowded, much less crowded, they'll also be less expensive, especially if you pick a destination where the dollar goes farther. So maybe one of the Balkan nations, which will still have great museums, centuries old monasteries and churches. Some of them will have incredible alpine scenery or resort cities that were created by the Venetians back when the Venetian Empire was a thing. And so you get the same kind of extraordinary architecture you'd see in the Veneto, which is, you know, Venice and the surrounding cities. But you get them at less of a price on the ground. The problem is flying into those places can be more expensive. So what do? You do a two-part search. If you want to go to, say, Montenegro, if you look for a flight from the U.S. to the major cities there, it's going to be crazy expensive. So what you do is instead, you do a reverse search. You look at which cheapo carriers, EasyJet, say, or Ryanair, or one of the other inexpensive European-only carriers, if they go to that city, where do they come from? And often, the cheapo airlines will fly out of the major cities of Europe into the secondary cities. So say you're going to, I did this when I had to go to Naples last year. I discovered that if I flew to Paris and then changed to a cheapo carrier who was flying from Paris to Naples, I spent much less money than I would have booking, say, a major carrier that went to both of those places. Now, this is dangerous. You have to be strategic if you do this because you will be flying two different airlines, which means if your flight gets delayed or canceled, the second airline is not going to cut you any slack. You could have to buy a new ticket. So you're going to have to do a big, big fat layover between those two flights. You know, you're probably going to have to go through customs. You're going to maybe pick up your luggage. You're going to have to recheck it. You're going to have to go through security again. So You want to make sure you have time for all of that. You want to build in time for delays. But doing that, you can save literally hundreds of dollars. Other things you can do to save on summer travel, picnic. You don't have to spend every meal in a restaurant. Instead, go to a local deli, go to a local supermarket. There's something really fascinating about seeing local markets, and especially food markets. I love it. Just seeing the different products on the shelves, I don't know, floats my boat. And you never feel like you're losing out if you're in a beautiful park, overlooking an incredible vista, or sitting on a bench in the middle of a city and watching the people go about their daily lives. That can be even more fun than a restaurant meal. So you want to picnic and do snacks for some of your meals. And also before you go, maybe even when you're researching what destinations to go to, consider what is the free stuff that's going to be going on in the summers. Because a lot of cities put on free concerts, free dance performances, there are parades, there's all kinds of stuff that can really make your vacation. Two summers ago, I went to Vienna, and it has the most remarkable program of free stuff in the summers. I gathered with mostly locals in this extraordinary ancient square. Just being in the square was such a rush. And they had set up a massive screen in which they screened famous concerts from the past. And the musicians were extraordinary. The setting couldn't have been more beautiful. I wouldn't normally go out of my way to watch a screening of a concert, a classical music concert. But it made sense in Vienna. It felt like a very Viennese thing to do. You go to New York, you can go to Shakespeare in the Park and see some of the most elevated Broadway and Hollywood stars trying to do the Bard. And it's a big event, and it's absolutely free. And you have these types of freebies in the summer months, particularly across the planet. So do seek them out. Do build vacations around them. You won't be disappointed. Okay, I wanted to talk about one travel adjacent thing before I leave, but it's something that's affecting us greatly at Fromers.com. It's affecting pretty much every media outlet on the planet. This week, Google demoed its new search mode. And what this search mode is it's more like ChatGPT. A lot of people, instead of searching now, are simply going to AI and asking it questions. Why is that problematic for media? Well, to quote Noam Chomsky, AI is basically a plagiarism machine. The biggest theft of intellectual property in the history of humanity has happened over the last 2 years with big tech stealing all of Fromer's copyrighted material, all of Fodor's copyrighted material, all of Lonely Planet's, all of the New York Times, all of the Washington Post's. Basically, all of our material was taken without our permission and without compensation to train AI. And so when you use AI to plan a vacation, you are basically rewarding this theft. And it's about to get worse because Google is going to be going to a link-free search. So it used to be for us, for every other major travel site, we would depend on search optimization. We would know that people would come to us because we have paid writers to be out in the field, tasting restaurants, trying out hotel beds, looking at the newest attractions to open, and writing up impartial reviews that are based on wide knowledge. Because when you go to Fromers.com and you read a review, our authors have been to all of the hotels in that area. And so you're getting a smarter review than you would on, say, TripAdvisor, where you're taking advice from somebody who's been to exactly one place, one hotel, and may not know that right down the road, there's a place that's better and cheaper. if you are getting advice from a real person, because we know that marketers have infiltrated many of the opinion sites, including TripAdvisor, because they'd be crazy not to, because a lot of people are basing decisions on those quote-unquote user-generated reviews, which are often just marketing. And this is also the type of material that AI is going to pick up. So I would make the argument you're probably going to get less real advice with AI and more advice based on which organizations have the most money to be able to flood the internet with the most information about what they're trying to sell. So if you want to support us, if you want to support other media organizations, if you feel that journalism is important in democracies, and I certainly do, I would beg you to not do AI-generated searches. Right now, two-thirds of the people who go to Google stay on Google because they get that little blurb and that's the answer to their questions and they no longer click on the links. This has led to massive drops in traffic for many media sites. And because the honest ones rely on advertising, at Fromers.com, we have advertising next to our content. Those sites that have no advertising, the content is the advertising. We're trying to be real journalists, so we put it next to it. But without traffic, we can't exist. I mean, our books will continue. They're doing great. It's just a problem for us and for every other media site on the web. Okay, I'm going to end this long sermon. I think you know what to do. And let me also ask, if you like this podcast, please give us a 5-star review on media sites such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. It really helps. Okay, enough of all that. Thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, I wish you a hearty bon voyage.
The channel seem the Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I, I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.